Hi everyone, welcome to the BASE XPI Community of Practice webinar. This is Scott Weigert with you here today, and I want to add that I'm joined by a couple of my colleagues. I've got Walter Jackson, our Director of Global Partner Development here.
Hi everyone, great to be here.
Yeah. And Meredith Courtney, our SVP of Marketing, is on the line as well. You want to say hi, Meredith?
Hi everybody, thanks for joining us today.
And looks like I got Michael Sychek. Some of you know Michael from your feedback or through one of the certification programs. Michael's joined us as well too, so he might be weighing in as well. So Walter, some of you met at one of the more recent programs. I think if you're at one of the earlier programs, you might not have had an opportunity to meet Walter, but he's working a lot with our independent coaches in particular, but playing a really important role in growing our community of practice. And Meredith is on the call today as our SVP of Marketing. She's going to be weighing in a little bit later in the call on some of the exciting new developments we have in terms of marketing collateral, particularly for independent coaches. But that said, I want to note our topic today, as you know, is making the business case for the BASE XPI. It's important to acknowledge we have two different types of professionals on our call today and in our community of practice in general. We have several independent coaches on the call today who are using the XPI as part of their own independent practice as coach consultants, but we also have some internal coaches who are charged with leadership development within large companies. So we're going to try to straddle the fence a little bit today and make sure we cover topics of interest to both of those cohorts today in the group. But regardless of your role on the call today, we know that you often need to make the business case for using the XPI. If you're an internal coach, you're trying to make an internal sale at your organization, maybe trying to convince a business leader that this might be worth their while for themselves or for their group or for their team. And if you're an independent coach, you're going to need to convince business leaders or talent development professionals that the XPI is worth adding to their toolbox of assessment resources. So either way, we'll have helpful advice for you as we go forward. So just a quick outline of what we're going to cover here. If you've been on our community of practice webinars before, you know they're pretty informal. We're going to go through 20 to 30 minutes of some content related to today's topic. And then at that point, we're going to encourage you to raise your hand. You'll see there's a hand-raising icon that you have on your interface there. And if you want to weigh in at any point, ask a question, get some dialogue going, we'll selectively unmute you one at a time so we don't make it too chaotic. And we'll give you a chance to ask some questions, share some of your own experiences. Maybe you have some things you'd like to share about what's worked with making the business case to folks that you know. But to give you a little preview otherwise of what we're going to talk about in the next 20, 25 minutes, we're going to talk about the whole thing of why introduce the XPI, just reminding you of some good talking points that you might want to use when working with your stakeholders. What makes the XPI valuable? We have some exciting new information to share that I don't think any of you have seen yet on how we know it works. We just completed a T1, T2 XPI with a cohort who went through it, I think, last spring and then went through a second go-round in January. And we're going to show you some of the we had from before and after and what we learned from that. And then we have a meaty section on how to address some of the common objections that come up and what else can help make the business case. And that's where we're really going to tap Meredith's expertise today. So to dig right in, these are some things I bring up, not to sell you guys on the XPI, because I know you're already true believers in the XPI, but these are some things you might find helpful when you're talking to people who are wondering, why do I want to work on executive presence? Why does this matter? Rather than saying, I know it when I see it and all that, what's some data we can point to as reasons this is worth paying attention to and really worth trying to assess and address? So the first is this survey that says executive presence counts for 26% of what it takes to move ahead in your career. That's one we cite pretty often. Executive presence is the number two reason leaders seek coaching. I think as Walter pointed out, we did another webinar yesterday. The number one is just leadership development, right?
That vague general area of leadership development. So executive presence was one of the more specific reasons to go to coaching, above things like someone's in trouble, a problem, issue with someone. So it's the most specific reason that was cited.
Yeah, and anecdotally, we found that to be the case, too. In fact, in a lot of the coaching work that we've done, we find a lot of frustration from leaders, from business leaders, who say, I'm getting performance feedback, but it's awfully fuzzy. I'm getting told things like, you need to have stronger executive presence, or you have to project the part of a senior executive. We think we should work on your influence skill, develop polish and confidence, bring more energy to your leadership, work on commanding the room with impact. And the problem with a lot of those topics there is you look at these statements and you say, well, what am I supposed to actually do as a result of this? So I think what we've found and what leaders have found working through this is we can take some things that are very real perceptions people have and get a lot more granular about it, get more specific, talk about how it's showing up in a context. So it's a way, whether you're talking about performance feedback or a leadership competency model, this is a way to give you real teeth and say, this is exactly what's missing. When we say polish and confidence, this might be showing up in the appearance facet. It might actually be a matter of inclusiveness or something like that, or humility. There's a number of ways we can drill down to this when we use the XPI. Another term that I've started using pretty recently is, you know, I present the XPI to people as an important piece of the puzzle that people didn't realize was missing actually here. So that's one way to think of it as well. And here's just some comments we've had from folks recently. You know, one VP that we talked to said, you know, my organization, executive presence is a phrase that we use to describe people who are ready or not ready for that next level. But before we had XPI, we couldn't really demystify or decode what that meant. This is a woman who works for a large financial services company. She said, for all the hours we spent on these talent development meetings, we really hadn't had a way to have meaningful conversations about executive presence instead of this beyond this gut feeling about whether people are ready or not. Another one, people have talked about the depth and precision of the XPI and giving a little different perspective on how it can help a high potential development into an influential leader. And the fact that you might get pushback from folks like, hey, we were already using other assessments, and there's a realization once people use this, this isn't meant to replace a lot of assessment, it's meant to complement it. And then another one is somebody told us, once I test drove the assessment, I found it was so rich and complex, helped me tease out some themes and frame them, and my year-end goals are going to be based on what I've learned to improve the alignment, engagement, and productivity of my direct report organization and my collaborations with my peer group. And that's pretty typical of what we hear. I think there's sometimes some skepticism coming into it. You know, I've been assessed to death. I had this really cool assessment, but I still not sure what to do about it. And then people seem to appreciate the robustness, the personal nature of the XPI, and how it leads to tangible actions and goals. So those are just a few things that we've heard that you can certainly talk about as well. And now I want to talk a little bit about how do we know it works. I think, as I said, we're all true believers in it, but people like to see a little more empirical evidence. On the one hand, I could argue that the XPI was built on research that was really looking at what qualities of research, what qualities of presence were driving results and business results. That's all baked into the formula of that. But now that we've had a chance to use it for a few years, we're getting to say a little bit more about how it helps leaders move the needle. First off, it's important to say that I don't think you should ever present the XPI to any of your clients, whether they're internal or external to you, as sort of a one-and-done experience. If you go through the XPI feedback, as everyone on the call has gone through here today, you'll know that there's some real value you get of going through that process. It's definitely going to give you some insight. It's going to build awareness about where you're at as a leader. And we're going to give you some beginning kind of baby steps toward making that actionable. But as we know, since we're all talent development professional, I'm among my peeps here today, to have meaningful, lasting change, it's going to take something more ongoing over time. So the XPI is a great way you can present it to people. It's a great way to remove the blind spots about how you're perceived, develop some insights about how to take some action. But over time, it's going to take energy and coaching, whether from an internal resource or an independent coach, to move the needle. So with that in mind, let's take a look at how we worked with a group of leaders last year. Now, this was a group of leaders who we had two cohorts, basically. We had 9 people who were in a executive presence mastery program. So those folks went through the XPI assessment, and they had a lighter touch of 6 coaching sessions. So we did a 2-day program with them where, in addition to the feedback, they had a chance to work with their peers and with some base coaches on better understanding their strengths, how to leverage them and work on their development themes, manage time and energy, and so on. Then we had a second cohort that exclusively did coaching. That group was a bit more senior as well, so that was a little different. So I wouldn't say it's a completely comparable group, but we did 10 coaching sessions there. Still not a heavy coaching intervention, and it was all virtual, I might add, over the course of, I think, 6 or 7 months. So that was the project we did. This was a big aerospace company out in the Midwest. And one thing we were able to show them, which is another thing you can present to people when you're making the business case for the XPI, is their group results. So for that group, there were 23 leaders. And one thing we were able to show them was how they were showing up in terms of their highs and lows. So for example here, this chart, this is a frequency distribution. This is telling me that for 21 of the 23 leaders, integrity was among their 5 highest rated facets. And for 0 of them, was it among their lowest. Meanwhile, nobody had resonance among their highest rated facets, and 19 out of 23 had it among their lowest. So this is a way we can sometimes aggregate XPI data in a group and give them some feedback on how they're doing as a team. So this group felt really good to see that their practical wisdom was coming across pretty well, that they had that appearance, the readiness for the game, that it was confidence, they were seen as decisive and accountable, which is maybe connected to their high level of integrity. But given that they were working on employee engagement in their business context, they were a little troubled to see, wow, those resonance numbers are a little worrisome, and inclusiveness and vision are things that are maybe getting in the way and concern. Why wouldn't that be higher if we're trying to get people excited and motivated to seize the direction of strategy of the company? So that's another tool that we use sometimes. But the interesting thing was we put that group after that initial results through all this coaching intervention on the program. We then did a second XPI, and I'll show you the specific results in just a moment. But what we saw was that 74% of them improved in 10 or more of the facets, which was kind of surprising in a sense, because the coaching focused exclusively on 2 or 3 areas. But we were able to see improvement in as many as 10 or sometimes even all 15. Which was kind of interesting. And that's the point you may have heard us mention at certification, that if you kind of focus on a couple areas, it's going to give you that sense of self-efficacy as a leader, like, gee, you know, to fix 15 areas sounds awfully overwhelming. But in general, if I focus on 2 or 3, then that feels manageable. But at the same time, we can elevate. If we work on resonance, for example, we're bound to see practical wisdom go up, because that wisdom is going to be connecting with people. We're bound to be seen as more inclusive, perhaps, if we're taking time to clarify others' concerns or feelings. But do you have any thoughts on that, Walter?
Yeah, the interactivity always comes across pretty strongly. And as you said, things like composure, if you're not very high on composure and you're coming in and demanding that things get done or being excited when a project doesn't hit on target, then you're not going to be seen as having very much resonance, or people aren't going to sign up for your vision. So the interactivity of the items really makes a difference.
Yeah, I would say it wasn't dramatic improvement, as we'll see in a moment, but it was exciting for people to see, like, wow, if I just focus on a couple areas, I'm bound to see improvement elsewhere. So let's take a look, a different way to look at the first result. So this was the group as they looked, broken out by rater group. And this is a fun thing you can do. If you end up using the XPI with a group of leaders, as I know some people have done here on the call today, this is a fun thing to be able to do. We can see in white, the white line shows how individuals rated themselves. So we see the first time around, direct reports rated this group pretty favorably. Supervisor ratings lagged a bit on the self ones. And there was a bit of a pretty big gap, really, between the supervisor and directs in particular. And then you can see a list of their highest rated facets and lowest rated facets on the other side. So let me point out a couple other little details here as well. So there was a lot of alignment around integrity, that the groups were all seen as being pretty high in integrity, a little lower from the peers, but generally pretty high. There was also some good news from directs on practical wisdom, which was coming across pretty strongly. And then appearance was pretty high with most of the groups, and particularly high with direct reports. So those were things that we could point to that we could maybe say, well, what are we doing with direct reports that we could leverage with others? On a more negative side, look at the gap between how directs rated practical wisdom and how the supervisor did. So that was something we wanted to explore and understand, and many people worked on that in their individual coaching. Another one was this vision gap. That was in general a bit lower, but particularly with supervisors. And that was a little bit worrisome too. What's keeping the supervisors from seeing the vision? So this was sort of our starting point for what we did here. And it's interesting, here's the second go-round. So you'll notice, and I'll toggle back and forth here a little bit so you can see the difference. So you can see in general the trend was the scores went up. And also the more striking thing to me even is there's a real closing of the gaps. You see how spread out the lines are here. We can see there's a lot more convergence of opinion. So there's different hypotheses of what might be happening here. It could be that some folks who had lower ratings from supervisors were focusing more in their coaching on that rater group to see how we could improve. But I also think there was just a lot more dialogue and conversation in those rater conversations. So people were really getting on the same page as to, hey, what's Walter working on for his development themes? How do people see his strengths? So it was kind of exciting for us to see not only the improvement here, but to see that convergence happen a bit more. Again, not dramatic, but this was with a fairly light touch of coaching intervention over several months.
I think one of the things that we talked about in terms of the directs was as the process went along, the direct reports perhaps were giving elevated scores to their supervisors. And as we went into the second one and people had begun to see changes, the direct reports were really saying, so you really want the truth this time around. And so that they're a little bit more accurate in terms of what was being discussed on a daily basis in terms of executive presence.
Yeah, we also had some interesting cases, Walter, that's a good point, where someone got a lower score on a facet but actually felt pretty good about it. We had one guy who was very high in confidence and that went down while a lot of other qualities went up. He said, no, I feel good about that because one of my issues I was really trying to focus on is I'm kind of quick on the trigger. I'm very quick to take action and I was cutting off dialogue, not giving enough people an opportunity to weigh in and contribute, and I think that was hurting me in categories like resonance and inclusiveness and restraint, which you saw elevate. So in some cases, we saw some scores go down a bit and wasn't necessarily bad news either. Here's just a few other data points worth noticing here as we look at, you know, understanding how the XPI works. This is a bit of a surprise to me. Remember how high those integrity ratings were on the previous page? Well, they went even higher, which is kind of curious because it wasn't really a focal point of coaching. A second one, that practical wisdom, look how much higher that was from the previous page. The supervisor is much more aligned with the self. Well, I think that reflects a lot more of the dialogue and also understanding what was getting in the way. Am I not asking enough questions? Am I not getting out of the weeds and simplifying things for my supervisor? Am I maybe failing to demonstrate that I am thinking a step or two ahead and really delivering insight that's relevant to my audience? So that improved pretty dramatically. Another thing, this was a real surprise to me as well. Again, appearance was not a flat side. It was not a development theme. And yet, as high as those scores were, they got even higher the second time around. So again, you could make your own inferences, and we have some pretty smart people on the line who could probably do that. But what I would, you know, maybe conclude is by working on a lot of other qualities, people were showing up that much more prepared, that much more ready for the game, and that much more on top of things. So maybe something that wasn't a problem area got even better.
I think that's part of the integrity rise, that people began to see other executives working on these issues and said, well, that person is really working on something that's important to it, and they've opened themselves up. And I think that comes across as being authentic and having a high integrity.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, often we find that it humanizes people a little bit when they open up and share a little bit. I may be a pretty senior person, but you know, hey, I've got some areas that I could get better at too. I don't think I have all the answers, and I'm just trying to improve. One bit of worrisome news here was that inclusiveness score from directs got a bit lower there. So we're kind of debating what that might mean. Was it just people weren't focusing on that as much, or they were kind of trying to work on those peer audiences or supervisor audiences? But in any event, the client was really excited to get these results. They could see everybody now had a common vocabulary to talk about executive presence with. They could, and a lot of people were really very heartened to see that if I focus on this and put time and energy on it and get a little bit of expert assistance, I can move the needle on some qualities, even in the character dimension, which sometimes people think that's going to be hard to change. And again, without a heavy touch of coaching, this shows that if you use the XPI and follow it up with some coaching and some programmatic work, you can really move the needle. So let's go into now the topic of how do we address objections. I'm going to have Walter weigh in on this as well. So the first one, we have about five or six we're going to hear, and probably you guys have heard them. We'll give you an opportunity to weigh on them as well. The first one we hear is, do I need to use an assessment at all? That's something we sometimes hear from leaders. And our quick answer, I'll have Walter give his take as well, is you certainly don't have to use an assessment at all to help a leader with development. I mean, we managed to survive as a firm without the XPI for many years and prospered nicely. However, what we found is that it generally takes a lot longer to diagnose and improve issues with executive presence if you don't have that scientific instrument. So this is a real efficient way to surface and quantify differences in perceptions between a leader and the manager and peers and so on. And it also helps us pinpoint specific leader behaviors rather than describing those vague qualities that we often see in performance reviews and in qualitative interviews with stakeholders.
Now, that interaction between quantitative data and qualitative data and people's perceptions really is a good combination. I've seen a number of people who say, well, that's your opinion or that's their opinion, but when they see numbers on a page, they begin to take it a little bit more seriously, particularly those folks who are more interested in the technical elements of management.
Great. Okay, a second one. Our leaders have assessment fatigue. We hear that one a lot. This is a pretty common form of pushback. So often leaders or HR professionals tell us that people have been assessed to death. There's no appetite for additional assessments. And what you want to do here, if you're getting that kind of pushback, is to ask questions and find out what's really at the source of this. You know, what assessments have been used, if you're not aware of that? How recently have they been used? And how did that go? What were the outcomes? So once you understand where this is coming from, there's usually some ways around it. We find if there was a recent and comprehensive assessment, we may not need to ask all of a leader's peers or direct reports to participate in the XPI. While it's easy enough for our purposes to have dozens of raters for a given leader, we find you can have as few as six or seven raters and really get meaningful feedback.
And staging a program over time really helps instead of trying to do everybody at the same time.
Great. Another one is our leaders have no time to take an assessment. So what we found is that once leaders actually have experience with the XPI and find that it's relevant and it actually helps them take action and get things done, they find it's actually a time saver. But we have to acknowledge that there's sometimes those legacy perceptions out there that, gee, I've taken an assessment in the past. It wasn't that helpful to me. It wasn't that practical. So sometimes it's sort of like maybe we just need to have you try the experience or have one person try the experience first to kind of prove that it's going to have relevance. Because once people try it, I find it tends to fly with them pretty well.
Yeah, the comment about it not being actionable is important. It came up in a discussion with one of our other coaches this week. He had gone into a new client, and the first thing the client did was take out his old reports from a batch of assessments he had, plopped it down the table, and said, I'm sure there's a lot of very interesting and very important information in this stack of paper, but I have no idea what to do with it, and I hope XPI is going to give me something more. Right. And at the end of the conversation, he was seeing that it was very much more actionable than the information he had in the past.
Yeah, when there's skepticism, I just say kind of bring it on. You know, let's talk about it. Let's get it out there. And if you try it and find it's not that valuable, we'll have to say that's the way it is. But generally, people find it helpful. Another one, there's a concern there's too much burden on one leader. This doesn't come up too often, but when we've used the XPI in groups, we had one situation where we had a CHRO who had something like 18 people that wanted her to be a rater, and that was a challenge for sure. What we would say with that is people tend to underestimate how much time it takes to go through the whole rating process. So I would say a couple options there. You have to get a little tough and say, is it really crucial for one leader to do more than, say, five or six folks? Most people won't have more than six or seven direct reports. And if we decide that there is, we just need to allow a lot of time. We might need to allow a month. So if somebody does have 12 or 15 people to rate, they're doing that over 4 weeks and not trying to do 15 at once, because I wouldn't want to do that. The XPI only takes about 15 minutes to do, but when I've had to do, say, four at a time, I'll do a couple, and then I'll go come back the next day and do two more.
And if we can have a heads up before we start the project, we can look at the individual burden for each rater and see if there are some that we want to adjust their workload.
So Walter, why don't you talk about this one, the fact that, well, the XPI, it's going to overlap with other assessments we already use, or hey, we've always used another 360. You know, any thoughts you have about that one?
I think we have some differentiation from most of the 360s in that we're a situated assessment, as you've all heard in our certification process. We don't use norms, so we're really focused on the individual situation. What are their objectives? Where are they in their career? What are the things in front of them to work on? And a lot of the other 360s, I recently read an article that was talking about competency-based 360s, really spend a lot of their time assessing competence or skills. So things like business acumen, customer focus, directing others, managing diversity, developing others, all interesting skills to have, but XPI really focuses much more people to match up with the company's objectives.
Great. Okay, another one we sometimes hear, I prefer to use a qualitative 360, so a more subjective approach, getting that narrative going. And our main feeling here is, hey, you know, qualitative 360 or qualitative process can be real valuable. It can give you real color, and you can turn that into a narrative. And the main thing is it's not an either-or decision. Like, in fact, what our process often is now, we'll do the XPI in early days in our coaching, and then we'll follow up that process with a more targeted kind of qualitative set of interviews with folks. You know, so another way to think of it is I'll sometimes see some smoke when I look at the XPI. If I want to find out the source of the fire, I might be able to dig a little deeper and get a little bit more color, either by talking to people who were involved in the XPI or maybe some people who were not part of that cohort as well. So that can be a useful thing to do as well.
You can use those interviews also as a pulse check as you're going forward. Are things really moving? Are people seeing a difference? That can be really helpful as to sustain the change.
And one last one, you may have heard this, it's too soon. This leader just started a new role. We want to let them get their feet on the ground, and you know, we'll probably hold off on any kind of assessment for a year or so. And we really want to challenge that thinking, and there's some good rational reasons for doing that. What we've found actually is we've had people take the XPI at all different points in the process. In that cohort I was describing out in Iowa that we worked with, one person, as soon as I got in the orientation call with her, I learned that she had just been promoted to a new role. I couldn't tell anybody yet, but she was about to be moving up in the engineering group. And we looked at that saying, well, now we don't have any input from your new stakeholders, but we can still learn from your old stakeholders. But to me, left to my own devices, if you said to me, what's the perfect time to give the XPI, I would say, if you told me that Walter is just starting a new role, I'd say, I'd like to wait maybe 3 or 4 months, but no longer. Because if I wait a year, I'll get some good data at that point, and might be more informed at that point. But I also would worry that the perceptions of him might be more entrenched at that point. And if he's got an issue, if people are seeing his lack of concern or his lack of restraint, I can still address those, but probably better to move on those things once we've got an early take on that, once people have had enough interactions with him to get a sense of him, but it's not cemented in place. So that's just something worth thinking about.
Everybody's heard of the book, The First 90 Days, and they are critical. But the perceptions that arise out of those first 90 days are also important. And before they get solidified, this gives an executive a chance to change them a little.
Yeah, great. So on that note, I want to turn things over for just a few minutes. I do want to open up the conversation and get some dialogue going here momentarily. But Meredith Courtney, our SVP of Marketing, is just going to take a few minutes to walk us through what else can make the business case and some other tools and things that you might not be aware of. So Meredith?
Thank you, Scott. Hi, everyone. I think as most of you are aware, we recently published our most recent book, All the Leader You Can Be, The Science of Achieving Extraordinary Executive Presence with McGraw-Hill. I think most of you on the call should have received at least one complimentary copy by now, but if you haven't, please do let us know after the call, and we can make sure to get that over to you. I think what we've been finding in terms of how the book helps us make the business case for the XTI is that it makes it practical in terms of putting the model in the hands of the leader in a practical way that helps them to grasp the model and the research behind the model in a leader-friendly way, if you will. So for those of you who have read the book, you know that the book really is an outline of the model, the dimensions and facets. And the case studies within the book really do help relate it to both the leader in terms of their role, but also their business challenges. So there's specific sections of the book that talk about how elements of the model relate to things like change and how they specifically apply to, for instance, high potentials or women in leadership. So by giving, you know, a leader who you might be interested in having go through the XTI, by giving them a copy of the book, it just really gives them a more practical, realistic way to be able to see the model in terms of their own business challenges. So again, let us know. Again, if you haven't received a copy, we'll make sure to get you on the list to receive one very soon. And if I don't have control of the slides here, so if you can switch the slide on your end, Scott, thank you. The next tip that we have that we've been finding as we've been going along in terms of our book marketing campaign is that we have developed this pre-assessment questionnaire, which is available at alltheleaderbook.com. And the questionnaire is really meant to be a simple and easy and complementary way that executives and leaders can see how the model applies to their role and their business challenges without going through the XTI yet. So it's almost like a preview of the XTI. So the questionnaire is basically just it has about a dozen questions, and they all relate to different elements of a leader's role, so that it asks questions related to when they've been, if they've been promoted recently, what they're facing in their role in terms of challenges and goals and imperatives. And then the survey actually generates kind of an automatic response that gives them some insight into how the different facets relate based on the answers they've provided. So it gives them sort of that view into how, you know, things like restraint and inclusiveness and intentionality and some of the other facets on the model, how that specifically applies. So this can be something that might be helpful if you're working with a leader who is interested in going through the assessment, but they really just want to get a taste for what it's like and how it's relevant to them. Next slide, please. Thank you. So lastly, I just wanted to once again bring everybody up to speed on our partner marketing portal, which many of you have seen. So we do have this community of practice resource page, which as you all know is how you find out about our webinars and the other tools that are related to the actual implementation of the XTI. But if you go to the next slide, Scott, what I really wanted to highlight for everybody is the partner marketing resource page, which some of you have seen and others might not have seen, or maybe you haven't explored it too much in depth yet. But on this page, you'll find a lot of tools and resources that you can use to essentially, you know, market and sell the XTI. If you're an independent coach to your clients, or if you're working internally, you can use it to really distribute and communicate internally about the XTI. So just as a very brief recap, on this page you'll find some approved language for websites and social media or other appropriate channels that you can use to talk about the XTI. We have a logo that you can use on your website and in your social media profile that that'll let people know that you are a certified partner. We also have a brief PowerPoint presentation and some other electronic materials that actually are all about the model. So if you are trying to incorporate something about the model into a presentation you're giving, we have some approved materials there on that. And then lastly, a new document that we recently put together in advance of our most recent certification program that some of you were present for and others haven't seen yet is really a pretty extensive document on how to build your base XPI practice, and it gives you some pretty practical tips on how to get started with the XPI in the first 90 days. And we also have what we call the XPI product source code. So that really gives you some talking points that walks you through some questions like how is it relevant to your buyer, some of the things that Scott talked about in terms of potential objections you might encounter and how to respond to those, what's different about the XPI approach. So that really is a resource that we find very valuable when we're talking with our own clients about the XPI, and we hope you will as well. Now, lastly, before I turn it back over, I just wanted to mention that we do have a few new things that will be coming up soon. One is that we have a refreshed pricing model that includes some volume pricing. I will be sending out a PDF document with the details on that within the next week or so, and Walter will be following up with everybody to clarify any questions you might have about that. And then lastly, I wanted to mention that we will be sending out within the next month or so an invitation for you to participate in our LinkedIn group. We will be starting a LinkedIn group that's basically an online extension of this community of practice, and we're doing that really as a response to the feedback we've been getting from our certified partners that they would like to have some forum to be able to interact with one another and also just to have access to contact information for one another. So for instance, maybe somebody came to a program in February and they're really looking for a resource in a specific region that came to one of our certification programs back in 2015. We want to make sure that everybody is networked together so that you can refer where appropriate to one another, and those will be specific to the independent coach cohort and the internal and corporate cohort of certified partners. So we'll have two separate groups based on what group you belong to. So that is a very brief summary of that. If any of you have any other questions or recommendations around how we can help provide kind of that marketing and sales support to you, please do let me know after the call or, of course, submit your comments or questions for the webinar today. And I'll turn it back over to you, Scott.
Okay, thanks so much, Meredith. So what I want to do now is make sure we leave some time for Q&A. So at this point, if you want to, I'll give you a couple options. You can either raise your hand and click on that icon, and we'll unmute your microphone and let you speak so everybody can hear you. Or if you're more comfortable or in a noisy environment, feel free to type in a question as well. But we've talked about making the business case for the XPI today. We've talked about handling different objections that come up. So we'd like to, we always like to take some amount of time to address questions. So it looks like Chris is raising his hand. So Chris Polino from Genentech, we're going to unmute you now. So hey, Chris, how's it going?
I'm good, Scott. How are you?
Good. Do you have a question for us or an observation?
Yeah, just a quick question. It was around, I guess, following up or measuring progress, you know, after doing a first XPI. And I was just curious more on kind of Bates's thoughts or philosophies around this. You had talked on the call around, you know, the example you showed where you did a second assessment, you know, later after the coaching.
Right.
And my experience around and I guess some research around 360, you know, related instruments that I'm aware of is, you know, kind of doing a time one, time two change may not always be the best way to look at it because there can be, you know, circumstances that change in the business or in a position, new manager, things like
yep.
that. And so, you know, I've always kind of thought around targeted follow-up, you know, instead of doing a whole-blown 360, focus in on one or two things and actually focus in on the change that's happened, you know, as more of a scale. So I was just more curious your thinking on that.
Absolutely, yeah. So this was, I probably should have pointed out, this program we did with this aerospace company was a bit of an experiment. This is something they really wanted to try, and we thought we'd give it a go. And we did a couple other things as part of that process. We also tracked leading indicators. Like at every coaching session, we had our coach evaluate qualities like the leader's attitude, skill, readiness, a few other categories, timeliness, I believe, and we were able to kind of track their progress that way. But to your point, one thing we also, due to the very reasons you mentioned, we had to explain to them the nature of confounding variables when you do a T1 and T2. And indeed, we found when we did the T2, you know, some people were in totally different roles. Some people had raters who were big fans who had since retired. Some people had had big critics who had since moved on and weren't part of the cohort. There were different macro events and micro events going on with each leader, which could have skewed the results. So I share some of your cautionary notes or your caveats about a T1, T2. And it's not something we always use, and very much consistent with what you're saying. Quite often with our coaching candidates, our coaching clients rather, what we do is a more targeted survey, as you indicate. So what that might look like is we might send out an email after the leaders talk to raters, and maybe after 5 or 6 months have gone by, and say the survey questions, there might be two of them. It might just say, as you know, Walter has set a goal for himself of being much more interactive, being more available to others, doing a better job of listening, and so forth. And to what degree have you noticed a change in Walter in the last 6 months? And they can pick dramatic change, you know, good change, some change, or no change at all. So sometimes we do that kind of approach, very mm-hmm. consistent with what you're saying, Chris, is a more targeted way to have at that. So I think there's definitely yeah. something to be said for that, for some of those cautionary notes that you raise about T1, T2. But I must say it was interesting to try out the T1, T2 with its foibles and with its it acknowledged drawbacks. We still thought it was interesting to look at as one approach, but I think you make a great point. Does that help?
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
Okay, I think, if you were publishing a research paper, you would probably want to try to control for as many of those variables as possible. That wasn't really our objective in this one, but that would be you'd probably need a much bigger cohort so you could filter out the ones that had some confounding variables. So.
Right. Yeah, because that's something we had to address. Is some of the leaders, when they got the results, saw only modest improvements. I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? I feel like I've worked pretty hard on this. And we had to kind of explain, you know, all the different things that could be coming into play. So it was a bit of a complicating factor for sure.
Yeah.
Great question. Other questions or other observations that people have that you'd like to make at this point? I know we have Michael Sychek on the call as well. I don't know if Michael, if you want to add anything here. Maybe I'll unmute Michael and see if he has any thoughts on this topic of making the business case while we see if others could feel free to raise hands as well. Michael, do you have anything you want to add?
No, not at this point. No, thanks.
Okay, just checking. Okay, other questions, comments, observations about making the business case? What are maybe some other challenges folks have heard, and what's worked when you've dealt with those, or what would you like to kind of pool our talent and get some advice from here? Any other ideas? Walter, what's come up with you as we're waiting for some other questions to come in here? What have you heard as some typical objections that you've had to address with people who are less familiar with the XBI?
I think the one that we've used other 360s in the past, or we have a 360 that's in our toolkit, and really talking about how XBI differentiates itself from others, I think is a critical part of the process, and really focusing on that this is for senior executives. It focuses much more on the how you impact others from a leadership position, as opposed to focusing on some of those what you need to do as a leader or emerging leader. So it's and the fact that it's a situated assessment is unusual compared to a lot of them. It was one 360 from a competitor that I won't name recently that I saw that you open up the first page and it says John Jones, you know, 15 raters, and you got a 6.1. And then they give you a percentile point that you're in the 89th or 91st percentile of other leaders. And my sense of that was, okay, the discussion is done now. It doesn't really lead to a lot of curiosity. And so it may be statistically relevant and very well put together. I'm sure it is, giving the vendor that did that. But I think that much of, and they go on to give you the full report afterwards, but distilling it all down to one number really doesn't stimulate a lot of curiosity on the part of the executive. And I think that's the main thing that I keep hearing from XBI, is that people get curious about how am I coming across and how can I change some of these things.
Yeah, there are other questions at this point. Maybe I'll go back to Chris, if you don't mind, for a moment. Chris, maybe you can share some things that you found to be effective follow-up mechanisms. So I'm going to just unmute you again here, Chris.
Chris at Genentech, Scott?
Yes. Yeah, why don't you talk a little bit more? I thought you made a good point. What are some things that you found as helpful ways to follow up and assess progress, since you raised that as a question? You know, we talked about picking a specific theme, but what's worked for you?
Yeah, I think you mentioned it in your response. I really think following up with, raters or observers, it could be the same set. It could be, a different subset or some overlap, but, really zoning in on a couple of areas that you specifically have been targeting your development in. And I think, to your point, six months or some time after, to give people time to, actually develop and show and observe those things. And, either just a quick Survey Monkey, also could be verbally. If the coach wants to invest that time to go talk with people and just say, been working on these two areas, what kind of change have you seen, rather than, the same scale, as used in a first time go. So, I think, philosophically, it comes down to assuming that a behavioral change, kind of a level three analysis is sufficient, rather than going extensive. I've done ROI assessments where you try to dollarize that. That's what everyone wants. It's a heck of a lot of work, and at the end of the day, I think, at least my experience, people still kind of gloss over that or roll their eyes a little bit. So it's kind of a basic assumption that a level three, measurement is okay of behavioral change, and then targeting those specific one or two or three areas and behaviors somebody's working on, either, through some kind of survey or interview process after.
Yeah, great. Thank you. I want to invite others to make any other questions or observations at this point. I'd like to hear from some other people if you have other thoughts on the topic. While we're awaiting that, one thing I want to bring up that we've heard a few times, we get a lot of pressure here at Bates of people who say, call us up, say, we really want to work on executive presence. We really want to, this is important to us, this is something our leaders need to get better at, right? Great, great, great. And then they say, yeah, could you come in and do a two-hour program with 80 people? So there's sometimes that's something you have to push back against. And there's sometimes a debate with us. Do we just say, no, we don't do that? Or do we say, well, I think usually what we respond to that is, well, what would be the outcome you're looking to have from this? What's the impact you're looking to have from however we might intervene and work with your leaders? And if the answer is, well, we want to get dramatically better at executive presence, then I think we can be safe to say, doing a two-hour program without any sort of assessment is probably not going to move the needle a lot. Doesn't mean that we won't come in and do something. I think we were just talking this morning about how we have a program coming up, a one-hour program, like a keynote program in executive presence. But we're very careful to build that to people as this is a bit of a awareness building program. This is a way to introduce people to say, there is a model out there. There is science behind there. there are ways to get at this and turn this into something that's as abstract and vague and make it concrete. But let's not delude ourselves for a moment into thinking that going to a lecture or a keynote, even if it's a fairly lively and interactive keynote for a couple hours, is going to make people charge out of the lecture hall and suddenly exhibit great executive presence.
Maybe that's kind of the situation is oftentimes more of a check the box on the part of the people in the organization, that we had a seminar on executive presence, we've done that, and now we can move on to something else.
I think there's risk for everybody on this call. Your brand is a little bit at risk if you say yes to those things. You say, hey, I had so-and-so come in and work on us with executive presence, and you know what? We still have problems with executive presence. So if you're not pretty careful on how you position the work you're doing with people, you have that double risk of people saying, yeah, we did that. And secondly, they're going to look at down the road 6 months and 12 months later and say, yeah, we brought in Bates and didn't really work for us, didn't really change anything much. That wasn't so great. So we try to encourage more dialogue into outcomes, impact.
Clarity on expectations.
Right.
From all sides, from the,
right.
the line people as well as the HR folks.
A model I would recommend that, you know, I've been talking up here, we're trying to do more of this kind of program. If you really want to move the needle, we did a program with a large financial services company about a year ago. And I love this program. I think it was just fantastic. What we did was, it was a small group. It was like a regulatory and compliance group, a group under great pressure, a group that on the XPI, it unearthed a lot of real issues around topics like practical wisdom and composure and assertiveness. It was kind of a constant chaos kind of group. And instead of doing a one and done where we just did the feedback, they went through, six people went through the feedback. We then came back and said, here's your group level themes. Here's how people are experiencing you as a group, as in that frequency distribution I showed you earlier. And what's the impact given what you guys are trying to drive as a regulatory group? And then we followed up, I think it was quarterly programs, where we kind of one at a time picked some area of development. So we did a program on vision. You know, how do we develop and articulate exciting and compelling vision to people? And then we did another program on managing emotion. How can we use different tools and mental models to manage conflict and emotion more effectively and come across as more deliberate and restrained rather than hair on fire all the time? And combined with those quarterly programs, we did a fairly light touch of coaching where I think Margie Myers, one of our coaches here, I think did, there would be a quarterly meeting and then in that quarter you'd get maybe one or two coaching meetings with Margie of an hour and a half, couple hours each. So, hey, we worked on vision as a team. Now we're going to help you work on it as an individual leader. By the end of that year, I can tell you, that group was so excited. They had taken what they thought was a pretty intractable situation where people were going to be looking at them as sort of the hair on fire order takers, and they were really starting to move the needle and be seen as strategic partners. They could feel it. All the feedback they were getting formally and informally was indicating that. So I think when you're getting into these conversations with executive presence, and I know we have a lot of great independent and internal coaches on the wall, I'm probably preaching to the choir here, you know that it's not just going to be a quick fix a lot of the time. It's going to be all these qualities of executive presence are amenable to change, but not overnight for the most part. Walter, any other thoughts or other questions people wanted to raise at this point?
Just that I agree with what you're saying, that sustaining the change is really the hard part. Getting it kicked off, there's a lot of ways to do that, and we do it pretty well, but unless you have some sustaining force over time, whether it's coaching intervals or check-ins with your manager or with the internal HR folks, people get distracted by what's on their agenda for the day.
Right, absolutely. Okay, well, we have a fairly quiet group today, so I think we'll wrap it up here, unless there's any other late-breaking questions. But the only other thing I'll give you is a little bit of a preview of some things to come. As you mostly know from your recent email, I put out an article called On Overstrengths, Really, Can You Have Too Much of a Good Thing? That's on your content portal if you'd like to review that. Meredith and I have been talking recently about, I'm going to be trying to have more of those articles come up a bit more frequently. Maybe every month there'll be either an article or one of these Community of Practices webinars as a chance to get more information. Perhaps the most exciting thing I can tell you that's coming up is we just recently got a treasure trove of the historical data. So we've been just digging into, we're still trying to make sense of it, to be honest, but we're getting all the 1,000 or so leaders who've gone through the XPI. We've looked through what are the highest rated facets, what are the highest rated items and the lowest, what can we start to infer? We have new gender data that we're working on, and Suzanne's starting to roll out in different keynotes right now. So the message you see in the book about gender is actually a little bit of a different story right now. In fact, the headline is that last time we only saw 9 items where there was a significant difference between men and women. Now we're finding 36 items have a statistically significant difference. And interestingly, most of the difference is showing up in how peers rate women versus men. That of the 36 items, peers rate women higher on about 28 or 30 of them, I think, and they rate men higher only on a few, mostly in restraint. So I know Michael, who's on our call today, he's been looking at this data heavily as well, as have I and others here. So we're going to be rolling out more information that you'll be able to share with clients, and that will give you even more insight about how the XPI can give value and give perspective on what's going on with high potential and senior leader development. So any final thoughts, Walter, before we wrap up?
I think that covers it.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, folks. Our next scheduled webinar is coming up in June. You can sign up at the content portal if you haven't already. And that one's going to be a different take. It's going to be more on the content front. We're going to be talking about one of the real arts of giving feedback, which is how do you help someone figure out how to leverage their strengths? How can you show someone how their resonance, for example, if it's a strength, could be tapped to improve vision, for example, as a development theme? So I'm sure we'll have Michael Sychek on the call with me for that one to weigh in on that, and we'll have a lot of great information to share with us. So thanks so much for joining us. We enjoyed having you. Feel free to drop me an email if you have any other questions we haven't addressed today or if other things you want to discuss. Meredith, I think, will be following up as well with some information on her end. So on that front, we'll say thanks so much and enjoy the rest of your day. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.